Alrighty, guys. Okay. So how was week two? What's your feedback?
Yeah, I think we're starting to get into things nicely now. So starting to apply my brain a bit more laterally, you know, just kind of working my thinking around your guidance. So yeah, starting to become interesting.
Cool. Yeah.
So yeah, from my side, I just want to be upfront honest. Yeah, I only got through half of the stuff. It was quite a hectic week, but I will make a commitment to have week two and week three done by this week. But what I can see so far from the insight in week two, it's really, really interesting. And yeah, I can see now we're going more in depth into the actual course.
And cool. Yeah, just to add from my side, I've only done like probably 50% as well. I've had a bit of a busy one, but yeah, 24 to 48 hours. My apologies.
No problem. And Mpo, I got your email. I think it was yesterday with your questions. How was your experience?
Wow, that's great. I really enjoyed the stuff that you sent through for the week. It was really practical. You know, it gets you into action and you can see how the program is shaped. It's starting to take shape. I can see where this is going, and it's just incredible to be learning from this.
Awesome. I see you've drafted your letter, your email to potential corporate. Good.
Great.
All right. So I think then today, because as you guys said, I mean, you haven't been able to go through all the material for week two, which obviously means you haven't had time to send questions and that kind of thing, which is fine. I do have questions from Paul from this week. So maybe that's what we can do. We can just go through his questions. There are not that many. I think it's just three questions. So we can talk about that. And then talk about week three. Week three is always an interesting one because week three is the only week that we do live. So week three has not been created yet, because it depends on your submissions for week two. So we will actually do it together and we will do it live. I guess we're going to have to decide maybe later this week, because I want to give you guys time to go through week two and to do those exercises and send through the material that I need for week three. It's basically, week three is cool in the sense that I'm helping you draft your outreach email to the companies that you wrote in week one, because as you guys also said, we're getting into it now, and getting into it means we are actually doing the work, we're putting stuff together that we're gonna send out, because we don't wanna be here learning. You guys have businesses to run and you want to get results out of this. So week three is, that's exactly what it is. We're getting our outreach email, getting that done and getting it ready to go so that we can interact with the real world out there, the world of our potential partners. So that's going to be week three. So I'll give you more time to go through week two. If you guys want, we can do week three on Friday, if that gives you, hopefully, but it has to be this week either way.
Yeah. Sorry, man. I didn't mean to interrupt there. I apologize. Sure, I've done week two. I just haven't finished the last exercise. So I'm up to speed with the content. I just haven't finished all exercise.
I thought it was
50%. Yeah. And I've done 50% of the exercises, literally the last point, which was write your email. But I'm quite sharp on email. So I would, probably by tonight, I'll finish it sort of thing.
Okay, cool. No, thanks, Mark, for clarifying. No, I thought you were halfway through the actual material. Okay, no, I get it. I think cool. I don't want to rush you. I do think I must give you maybe a couple of days. We can do week three live. Because what we're going to do, we're going to be going through those emails. We're going to be breaking them down and, you know, making some changes where I think it's necessary, making some recommendations so that by the end of the session, we've got those emails tight and basically ready to go. So we could do this maybe Thursday or Friday. I'm really easy about it. We can decide now, in fact, whether it's going to be Thursday or Friday and what time will work for you guys. I prioritize this session above all other appointments that I have. So anything I'm doing those days will be organized around the time that we agree on. Sure. Maybe let's decide that now.
Okay, from my side, in an ideal world, it would be the earlier morning on Thursday, or it would be the first part of Friday. I can, you know, juggle things to accommodate otherwise, but that's what would be practical for me at this point.
Okay. All right. And everybody else?
Yeah, I'm okay with Thursday. I think Thursday I'm quite open at the moment, so Thursday would be all right with me.
Cool. How about these days, obviously, because of the lockdown and with my kids at home, and we still haven't sent them back to school, my business day starts at 12. But to try and accommodate Mark, I can try and be available earlier than that, maybe 10:30, if that works. For you guys, obviously, we still have to check with Mpoy as well. Yeah. But on my side, I can go with your Thursday early. But the earliest I can do would be 10:30. Would that?
Yeah, that's I hate to be the pain in the ass, but that's not going to work for me.
It's not going to work.
I've got at 11:30 on Thursday, which is like my primary appointment for the day, sort of thing. It's quite a task for me. But so let me say I'm unavailable from Thursday 10:30 until 3 o'clock. Any other day I will juggle around that, so you guys tell me.
Okay.
So if Paul's okay with it, I can also do Friday, and then I'm sure that will help Mark as well.
Yeah, Mark? Friday sounds good to me. I don't know if
okay I... yeah Friday let's do it
Friday morning, that is it fine Friday morning?
What's good for you, Sia, on Friday?
Same. I would say about 10:30 for me on
Perfect.
Friday.
Perfect. 10:30 Friday, done.
Yeah. Okay, done.
Everyone cool. Happy?
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Okay. Cool. That was not too bad. So 10:30 on Friday. I'll send out a meeting invite with our Zoom link for that session. And cool. What needs to happen between today and let's just say end of business Thursday, if I can have your exercises for week two by Thursday, end of business, I'd really appreciate it, because it would help me be prepared for our session on Friday morning. Sure. Would that be cool?
No 100%. Problem. Yep, 100%.
Cool. All right. Thanks. Okay, well, it looks like today's session is not going to be that long, of course, unless sure. There are things that come up, like some questions that you guys have, which I'll be more than happy to take. So I'll just go through and post email, because those are the only questions that were submitted to me for week two. The first question is, you write letters and no response. What is your approach if you see value to have partnerships? To have a partnership with this company? So if you write to them and you really, really feel that what you've got would be good for them and they don't respond, what do you do? So that's Mpoy's first question. Number two, what are the strategies to find out who the right person is to send an email to? So how do we find the right person to email in a company? Number three, what are some of the reasons provided to you when a partnership deal was declined? So those are the three questions that Mpo has submitted. Before I jump in, guys, obviously, as we said last week, this is our opportunity to really chat about these things and to have an engagement. What would you guys, because if you look at it just from your own experiences, we've all sent emails, doesn't have to be partnerships. We've all sent emails that were important to people and they sometimes they didn't respond. What would you guys say about this? What do you normally do or what would you do? If you send an email to a company, you want to do business with them and they don't respond, what is your go-to next step? Anyone of you, Keegan?
Okay, you go, Keegan. Keegan, you go.
Okay, so from my side, what I usually do is I usually follow it up with a phone call, and from there you can gauge as to how the interest is, or if there is opportunity, or if it's, I mean, the opportunity is closed, and then I just move on to the next one. Not sure if that is the right way, but that's what I've been doing.
Okay, cool. And just so that when Paul leaves this call, after he sends his email, if he wants to adopt this strategy. So just let's make it a bit practical for him. So you would send an email and then you would follow up. When would you follow up? Same day, next week?
I like to at least give it at least 3 days. 3 days, right. And then I'm sure 3 days is enough for someone to actually read the opportunity. Sure. Then I like to follow up with the phone call and say, hey, this is me, and this is what we can do. Just check in if we are interested. And then also, I think very important, as Mpo said, make sure you get the reasons why you've been rejected as well. So then, you know, those are the stuff that you can work towards to close or learn from it. You know.
Yeah. Awesome. Great stuff. Thank you. Thank you, Keegan. Mark?
Look, I must be honest. I'm quite bad when it comes to follow-up calls. I've always known this to be an area in which I lack. So depending on like my pre-existing relationship with them, I'll perhaps push the issue with one or two follow-up mails. Sure. I will call, but it's not my go-to really personally. Mm. But I am aware that I should probably improve on that. Just depending on the nature of my pursuit and the extent to which I wanted will determine I don't want to say the effort put in, but the point at which you decide, okay, there's obviously no synergy here.
Yeah. Great. No, thank you. Thanks, Mark. I'm actually more like you, Mark. I'm more the email kind of guy than the follow-up call. But just generally, I know that the phone is very powerful. Phone is very, very strong. So what Keegan, I would actually say both of what you guys do, they work. Because you send, like, typically for me, this is how I normally do it. One, I would send the email. I would send that email myself, following what we kind of discussed in week two in terms of structuring the email and what we're going to be really working on week three. So we're going to get a bit deep into the email and what are the important parts of it and why I believe these work, obviously based on my experience with email over the last 15 years of sending different types of emails, what I've found to be working and why I think those things work. So first thing would be definitely send that email. Another thing I normally do in the email itself is to say that if I don't hear from you, if I don't hear from you by this date, I would sometimes put the exact date or the day of the week. Let's say if I send an email today, I would say, if I don't hear from you by Friday this week, I'll give you a call on Monday. So kind of, it's I guess I'm creating an expectation on their side so that when I do call, it's not a cold call if they had received the email. Maybe a cold call if they didn't get the email. But the purpose of my follow-up call is kind of a light call in the sense that I'm calling to check if they got the email. I have no intention of discussing the contents of that email with them on the phone, or to make a pitch on the phone if they did not get the email. If they say, for instance, what's the email about? I prefer not to get into it. I'd rather, you know, resend the email if they didn't get it, and then say, can we talk about it once, at least once you've seen the email. Most of the time, I find that people are easy with that because now their level of curiosity is high and they also have things to do. So if they would rather read the email letter at their convenience, most people will be easy with that. Another thing that I do when it comes to follow-ups is, of course, emails. I do follow-up emails, but another way is to get my assistant to call. Rather than me calling, I've got an assistant who loves, you know, talking to people, very friendly. So she's great. She does an amazing job on the phone because of her personality and her experience. She's got years of experience as an executive assistant. So I'm fortunate in that sense that, you know, I would send out the outreach email and I would copy her. And in the email, if I don't hear from you, I'll call you. I will then say, my assistant Chantel will call and try and coordinate time for us to speak. So those are the three things. One, I would make a follow-up. I would actually four things. One, I would put a note on the email that if I don't hear from them by this date, I'll follow up. So that would be the one thing. Or I'll say Chantel will follow up. So that would be one. Two, it's either I will then follow up on the phone to check if they got the email if I didn't hear back from them. Or I'll follow up with email, or Chantel will follow up. So I'll do one of those, one or two, or all of those four things.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get to Mpo. Mpo, ideas that we've shared, do you feel that these can help you?
Yeah, 100%. Because I've sent a couple of emails and there hasn't been a response. So my response to it was it's a rejection on its own.
What would you do if you sent an email and nobody responded? What did you do in those cases?
I take it as a rejection.
So you do what?
I assume that they're not interested.
And you wouldn't do anything. You wouldn't follow up at all.
Yeah, I haven't followed up. I've just let it. Yeah. Go as was.
Hence, oh,
yeah.
Okay, so, but can you see yourself doing some of the things we suggested?
Yeah, definitely. What I'll do tomorrow, I'll follow up with another email and specify that if I don't hear from you on this date, I'll either call and I'll put some of this into exercise. Yes, definitely.
Okay, so I assume you've sent some emails. If you're going to send another email tomorrow, this suggests that you've already sent an email somewhere.
Yes, I have.
Yes, okay, I have. When did you send it?
I've sent the email, this is September, in the middle of August
last month. Okay, so you sent an email to somebody last month and they just never responded.
Never responded, never said anything.
Oh.
Two emails.
Do you feel comfortable following up on that email, or would you rather we work on our way of doing these emails this week and then maybe resend a fresh email? What do you prefer? Do you want them to go back to read the email that you already sent them last month, or would you rather get us to work together as a team on coming up with an email that you can send, and then if you have to follow up, you follow up on the one that we would have worked on together? What would you prefer?
I can wait. I mean, I've been waiting for a month, so yeah, I can wait. I think if we do it as a team, it'd sound much better. With a bit of training, I think it would be much more professional and probably much more accurate. So I can wait. I can wait.
Okay. We're not trying to convince you, but if you think it can help, we would be more than happy to chip in.
Yeah, definitely. I'll wait for the session. Yeah.
Cool stuff. Great. Thank you.
Yes,
Keegan.
Yeah. Just to add, I think also with and this is obviously, I'm just elaborating on my way, right? I think also it also helps with that follow-up phone call, because then it gets a bit personal with the person. So when you send the next follow-up email, you've kind of already broken the ice. You've already got a little bit more of a personal touch with that actual person. So that is why I like to go that way.
That's totally true. I agree. Can't agree more, Keegan. I actually have clients that are not wimps like me on the phone. Okay. That actually really don't have an issue with the phone, unlike me. And they get amazing results for the reasons that you just mentioned, because they get, you know, you get to connect with that person, you know. So I can't agree more. I love people who are not scared of the phone. I really do, because I think it's such a powerful tool for results. So I agree 100%. Are you that person, Keegan? Is that your kind of default approach, just generally to pick up the phone and talk to people?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty much easy with that way, but because I've done a lot of cold calling in the past and the build up, but I pretty much use a blended approach. Yeah, I like emails. I like phone calls. So I like to blend the two sides of things.
Awesome. No, I mean, that's a powerful combination. That's like a 1-2 punch. It really works. Awesome. So I think, if you are comfortable with the phone, I would really do more of that as well. You know, follow up with the phone and just talk to people, you know. But I always have to be honest about these things. I'm not, phone still makes me a bit uncomfortable to strangers. That's why I love having an assistant who can do that for me, so I can hide behind her. You know, until she has established my positioning on the other side. She has said nice things about me and all of the things. So people look forward to talking to me. So,
Mark, I need an assistant.
Yeah. And Paul, if I could just comment there as well. In my experience, I've had a few experiences over the years, but often when you eventually get hold of some of the people, not all the people, there's a genuine, hey, I missed it or whatever the case is. So don't give up just assuming it's been rejected, because often, more often than not, that's not the case. It's just people are busy, you know. You got to push for what you're after.
Yeah.
Totally. No,
100%. Thanks, guys. Yeah, the advice is really taken. Thanks.
Okay, great stuff, Mpo. No, this is all of what the guys have shared here is really, really good advice. So yeah, hope you go and do it, man. Awesome. All right. So number two, what are the strategies to find out who the right person is to send an email to? Over to you guys. Your approaches around this.
So me personally, I don't look at people like every day. It's not part of my every. So my strategy is a little bit different, but I use LinkedIn to an extent. I use my personal networks. Also sometimes use things like Rocket Reach to research people in certain positions and their emails, blah, blah, blah. So I do a bit of everything, a bit of sleuthing around. But again, it depends on the for lack of a better word, the sensitivity of my method of approach, et cetera, et cetera. So I look at it all in context and then I do my own homework. But personal referral, everything obviously is always best in my opinion.
100%. Yep. Keegan?
Mine stems off, again, the phone calls. And as I said, it did a lot of
calls. You sound a bit far, Keegan. I don't know if it's your mic or can you...
You hear me better now?
Not really.
Okay, well, I think my volume could be down. Just hold on.
I'm just worried about the recording that we're gonna produce.
Is it better now?
Not quite, but I think we can hear you, even though you sound a bit faint. But let's continue.
Yeah, I think mine also just stems around the phone call once again. So what I like to do is actually get a phone call through, find out who's the person in charge of what my context of my email is going to be targeted to. And then I actually get their details. And then I send through an email. I actually got like a bulk emailing list type of thing. And that's where I sort of put the person on the bulk emailing list, and then I introduce our products slowly and slowly just to make sure that they are reminded of us. And if there's ever they need anything, then we are there for them.
Great. And if you want to approach a company and you don't know who the right person is, sorry, what do you do?
No, so that's why the importance is the phone call. So you always phone through, deal with the gatekeeper of the receptionist, and then that's where you try and establish as to who the actual person that you need to be dealing with. Well, that's my strategy around it. Look, sometimes you do get the door shut in terms of the receptionist that doesn't want to give you those details. And then thereafter, then you just have to, I try and use my networks, try and do some research on the company, and try and research on the structure in terms of platforms like LinkedIn, sometimes Facebook, and that type of structure.
Yeah. Awesome. And when you do call, because I'm sure, and I'm asking, obviously, because I'm thinking, Paul listening, he's probably thinking, okay, if I call them, what do I say? Can you say anything quickly about that?
Yeah. So look, so I don't like to do a full rundown or pitch. It's sort of like a introduction. I just introduce myself and introduce what we do. And then I'll just ask them, you know, can I get the email address so that I can send you some further information on our company? And if there's ever opportunity that can arise, something simple, short, sweet, to the point.
Great.
Just an introduction type of email, and then I unfold it in the follow-up emails that actually go through thereafter.
Total perfect. Thank you, man. And I think just to add to what Keegan's saying, sometimes we forget that companies are there to do business. Like, they are not in the business of blocking people from reaching them. You know, they are there, you know, 8 to 5, whatever, and they've got a receptionist too, or whoever answers the phones, because they're expecting the phone to ring, because they are a business. And you know, and people will call to discuss and do business with them. So just keeping that in mind also helps. It's not like we're bothering them when we reach out to them. But I understand that sometimes when people are scared of contacting companies, it's because they don't want to bother them. They want to trick their way in. And sometimes it's really not necessary. So I like your direct approach, where you just say, hey, this is who we are. We've got a service that we believe can be of benefit to you guys. We'd like to send you some information to see, so that you guys can see if this is something that can be of benefit to yourselves. And then, sure, they're like, oh, okay, send it to me. And sometimes they'll say, send it to me, and then I'll forward it to the right person.
Yeah.
And, you know, then it depends what you want to do. In some cases, that's okay. It's not the best, you know, but it's a step, it's a foot in. Because the next time you call, again, it comes back to what you said earlier, that you, now there's a rapport. They remember you because you spoke to them last week. You emailed them, two touch points. Now you're calling, now you're calling them again, you know. Yeah. And, you know, in some cases, in fact, I remember one of my clients who's in the air conditioning space. He was targeting the fast food retail, if you want, a restaurant, I guess. I don't know if that's what they are called. Fast food chain, various chains of fast food like Nando's, KFC, and all those guys. So he had already done work with some of them. And then he wanted to get to this one competitor. He was really struggling to get through. He couldn't get through to the guy. And he had had a few, either the guy was not in or something like that. And he had had a few conversations with the guy's PA. So I said to him the next time, I said, he must call again. And even if the guy is there, he just says, look, hey, Lisa, I'm actually calling to talk to you. Okay. I'm actually calling to talk to you, and literally just talk to the PA, make her understand the real benefit of what his company can do for them. And ask her for her opinion on it, you know, for her to say, what do you think? This is what we do, and this is how we've helped other companies like you guys. We've done this, and this was the benefit for Nando's, and this way and that way, that way. We helped another company, and this was the benefit for them. I'm just, you know, and I think I would like for you guys to also have a look at this, because we could help you benefit in this way and this way. What is your take? You know, now she starts to apply it, because she's aware of the issues, because PAs are very close to these executives. They know what's going on. They write their emails. They know the issues. They know what keeps these guys up at night. Mm-hmm. And indeed, he did that. Called her, spoke to this lady. Now, the lady was the one doing the running around to coordinate the meetings. You know, she basically pinned her executive down and said, you gotta talk to this guy, because he's got things that I believe you actually wanna hear. Can I set this up myself? I manage your diary. Can I make this time? Because I know when the kind of times when you are in the office, I'll try to fit something around those times. And that's how you got the meeting. So talking to people definitely helps. And then another thing, coming back to what Mark said earlier, I actually do a lot of that as well. Fortunately, these days, it's really not that hard to get people's email addresses. There are all of these tools. I mean, there's Hunter, there are others. Mark mentioned Rocket Reach. There are others, you know, that you can get for free, where you could actually search, in some cases for Hunter, for instance. I think they give you free up to 50 email verifications a month. So you could just use hunter.io in case somebody is interested to check it out. And as long as you have an idea of the email structure of a company, so you would give it the person's first name, last name, let's say it's Old Mutual, and you already know that their email structure is oldmutual.com or something like that, then you just give them that. Of course, these vary. Some companies have more than one structure in terms of even their domains are more than some .co.za. So you want to play around with that if you've got time and if it's important to you to actually get that person. You may get it that way. Of course, LinkedIn, very powerful tool. It's always my go-to first before I do. In fact, no. My go-to is Google, actually. Let me not lie. It's Google. My first go-to is Google. I would Google the person's name, and I would literally start with, you know, so-and-so, first name, last name, email address. See what Google comes up with. Because sometimes you get so lucky, because people attend conferences. And in these conferences, in some of these conferences, there'll be a list of attendees, and there'll be their name, email, their first name, last name, email address, contact number, company they work for. I mean, I don't know how many times I was able to get databases of executives because there was an industry or an association meeting they attended, and there's a PDF document that's online with everybody's name who was there. So I always start with Google, first name, last name, email address, and then do variations of just, you know, searching for this person's company name and email address and all of that stuff. If I'm not finding anything, I would then think of people I know who's connected to that company, because again, what Mark said, your networks. Who, for instance, with the JSE, I didn't know this guy Noah Greenhill when I saw this story in Finwick where he was talking about their challenges, and then I thought, who would know this guy? And I remembered Greg. I was like, Greg Porter would know this guy. So I called Greg. I'm like, Greg, I've got something here that I think can benefit the JSE. And I just put him in the picture a little bit, because I also didn't want, I wanted him to know why I want to contact them, because that's another thing. You know, you don't want to put people in situations where, you know, they give you somebody's contacts only to find that you were calling to crap on that person and you make them look bad. So I always like to just tell somebody, maybe without always giving all the details, but to kind of paint a picture of why I want to talk to them, so that he's comfortable with my reasons for him to introduce me to this guy. So indeed, I spoke to Greg, I told him what I was thinking, and what he did was he gave me the guy's email address. Said, hey, email this guy, this is his email address. You can actually tell him that you got it from me, because he was comfortable. Obviously, he knows me, so he knew it had to be above board. And also the fact that I told him why I wanted to talk to him, so he was cool with that. So yeah, so that's how I got into the JSE, because it was through a contact of mine. And then again, back to what Mark said, LinkedIn. I use LinkedIn a lot. I would go, if for instance, I don't even know who the person is, if I don't even know who the person who holds a position that I need to reach out to in a company, I would just go on LinkedIn, search for company name, and position. You know, for instance, I would say Investec Corporate Affairs, just to see what comes up, you know. Or if it's an industry, like I'm looking, for instance, the other day I was looking for branch managers for banks. So I just went, Absa, branch manager, because I know that would be somebody's position in their profile. It's either now or at some point. You know, then it will pull up all of those, you know, LinkedIn will pull up all of those. And then I would just go through those profiles. But if it's a specific company, I'll put the company name, put the position, see what comes up. And then I would also look, who are some of my contacts who have a link to some of these companies. And then I would just reach out to them if I've got a relationship with them. And then just ask them if, because when LinkedIn gives you those results, they'll start with your first degree contacts. So you see the people you know there, and then just reach out to them and check if they are connected in this company and in what way. Or some of them, they work for the company. Even better, some of them even work there and they would know exactly who the right person is. They've got access to the intranet. I don't know if companies still have the thing called intranet these days, you know, and they can access everybody's email address within the company. So they could just pull it out of the system and just give it to you and say, don't mention me, you know. So I've done all of those. Yeah, I think that's more than enough for now. And later on in the program, I talk a bit about some other ways as well. So does this help you, Mpo?
100%. This is spot on. I've learned also about Rocket Reach, Hunter also. It's great.
cool.
Yeah, some right. of the things awesome. That I didn't know about before. So yeah, it's great. It's excellent.
Cool stuff, man. And then the last question. What are some of the reasons provided to you when a partnership deal was declined? Mpo, I'm bringing this one back to you. I just want to understand first, what informed this question? What do you want to know that you feel this question would help you understand?
Yeah, just to get a feeling that sometimes when you don't strike a deal, there would be some specific reasons that were given to say, maybe budgetary reasons, or maybe this is not in line with what we want to, the direction that the company wants to take. I just want to get your experience. See, I think most of the time when we speak to you, we've mostly touched on the successful deals that you have been able to get. So I just wanted to get a feeling of what were some of the reasons, if there were any, that you couldn't get, and what were those reasons maybe given to you.
Cool. And how much of this question, thank you for that great answer, and how much of this question relates to what you told us earlier about your assumptions?
When
you don't get a response.
Or when I don't
remember
get a response.
Earlier you told us that when you don't get a response, you then assume that that's a rejection. So I'm saying, how much of this question is related to that point you made earlier?
Not really much, because I just thought about it after writing that one. What could be some of the reasons that you get rejected?
Oh, okay.
It's not really linked to that specific question.
Okay, cool. No. Okay, cool. No, that's fine. I just wanted to understand the motive behind the question. Just in case it's fear driven. Just in case it's the fear talking.
No.
Okay. Look, in fact, you've kind of answered your question to some extent. Budget is always one of the issues. Timing is an issue as well. The alignment of what you're proposing and what they're trying to do, those things tend to be the most kind of general issues, and then the rest I find that they relate to misunderstanding, which comes down to approach. That's why in this program, I put a lot of emphasis on context. So when you reach out to people, it's important for your email not to come across as generic, not to come across as bulk email, for instance, like what Keegan was saying earlier about sending bulk. So some of these, you particularly when you want a partner, because you are approaching them because of who they are. So you do want to make sure that it shouldn't come across as, other 100 other people are reading the same email. But coming to your question about me, so the reasons what you said, which is budgets and timing and alignment and all of that stuff, those are typically, the kind of answers you'd get. And you never know really whether that's true or not in some cases, because you don't know their budgets. For me, two things I want to touch on. One, the focus on the positive. I know that was just a passing comment. And indeed, yes, I actually tend to focus a lot on the positive, because I do hurt when people don't take the, I used to. I think as I'm getting older, I don't take things as personally as I used to years ago. Back in the day, I actually used to take offense when people reject something that I feel it's slam dunk. As a result of that, I would quickly want to forget about those people and move on. Like, okay, many fish in the sea. So let me go fishing. I would take it the same way when one was younger, if you approach a girl and, they kind of give you the runaround, you're like, you know what? Enough of this chick. Let's go look at another, So that used to be my approach for that reason. Also because I was thinking in plural back then. Like I was thinking numbers, like we need to talk to so many companies. But nowadays I find that my approach is very personal. So I approach companies as people. Like I've kind of moved away from looking at companies as companies. I tend to, even the tone of my communication, it tends to be a bit more personal, because I know that I'm talking to David or I'm talking to Megan in this company. And I try to get in Megan's head about what's important for her, what's important for her position. How can what I'm proposing make her look good? Why would this be a really good thing for her, so that she can take all the credit for it? Because she's got KPIs. There's a lot that rides on the things she does for her job. And she's just like all of us. It's a job for her. She's going to leave the company in 6 months and 5 years later, she'll even forget that she worked there. But while she's there, she's the key for me to get in that company. So I tend to focus a lot on the positive. There's a long philosophy around how why I do this, but I really don't want to get into it because even with just general business, I like to design things. In some cases, I like to design things such that I still win, even if something has a 99% failure rate, but I still win. But like I said, it's way outside of the scope of what we are discussing. So there's a whole psychological thing about me and how I tend to look things to look at these things. And I guess generally, I just like to focus on the positive because I find that when the focus is on the positive, the energy levels tend to be higher than when you start looking at a negative thing, you start to see all the other things that are negative that make you believe that actually you're not really good at this, you know. But if you look at all the deals you've won, all of a sudden you feel like I'm the king of the mountain when it comes to doing deals. Look at all this achievement. And if you think of all the deals you didn't get, you can quickly, you know, get to a state of, you know, feeling a bit down on yourself. And that doesn't help for performance. At least that's what I've experienced over the years. So one of the deals that stands out for me was Anglo American. I think that deal, it actually, for the lack of a better word, it kind of pissed me off when I didn't get this deal because I was writing my second book in 2012. And I've got all these CEOs. I'm like, I've got this formula of getting CEOs in my books and getting paid, you know, long before I write the book. It worked very well with the first book and I was doing my second book and it was working. You know, I was getting all these orders coming in even before, in fact, my second book, I sold it. I started selling copies of it a year before I started writing it. I was receiving checks, people ordering hundreds of copies. So I go to Anglo American. I'm like, I want them to sponsor the book. You know, on top of all the money I've collected from pre-sales, I want Anglo American to actually be the sponsor of this book. And the CEO of Anglo American, a guy called Marco Tifani, is in the book. So I'm like, we can't go wrong with this. So I asked Mark, who would be, you know, the right guy to discuss this with? Because I think there's an opportunity for Anglo American in this project. And Mark was new at Anglo at the time. He had just been there for a few months. So in many ways, I understood that, you know, as a new CEO, you also want to respect the processes of the company. You don't want to be this new guy who's featured in that book. All of a sudden, you're forcing the company to pay for the book because you are in that book. So I also didn't want to put him in an awkward position. So I just wanted to, you know, make sure that I navigate my way. I just needed him to give me a name of the right guy. So indeed, he gives me this guy's name. So I talked to the guy about it, and the guy says, well, write us a proposal. And I could see the attitude. So I write this proposal, and I send it. Again, I'm like, this is just, you know, a formality, because there's no way they will say no to this. And as you, I'm sure you can imagine or predict based on what I've said already, they said no. The guy said no. And he was a bit, you know, nasty in his, you know, lack of interest in this project. That really, I didn't appreciate it. I can't quite remember. I know this doesn't answer a question, but I can't remember what he said was the reason, because I was so fixated on how dare you. You like, how dare you say no to this? Do you know who's in this book? Of course, he knew who was in the book. But my reading of it was that the guy was a journalist in his previous life. Now he was the head of, I don't know, corporate affairs or whatever. And my sense was that, you know, there was this feeling of, I don't want to say jealousy, but, you know, who are you? You know, I should be the one who's writing. But that was my reading of that. So what answer can I give you that would be helpful, Paul? I think it's important to find out why. I think that's one of the things I want to highlight and emphasize in response to your question. in your case, when you do send this out and you do engage with people, that's why I think on week one, I said, invite no in your communication with people when you're proposing something. Invite no. Do not go, you know, with blinkers where you block your ears. You don't want to hear anything other than a yes. Actually invite no, because it's such a great place when people can actually say no and you are having a conversation with them, because then it provides an opportunity for you to understand their thinking, you know, which people like me and other seasoned guys, you know, who've been doing business for more than 5 minutes, we know that no is actually not the end, you know. No is not the end. It's always a great place for a negotiation to start, because there's no negotiation if somebody says yes. What's there to negotiate? That's why there's a thing called negotiation, because somebody somewhere said no. Now let's have a negotiation. So that's my general approach nowadays, to invite no early. Because it takes away the neediness, the desperation for a yes. And it does open up a nice conversation, because whatever objections they bring forth are things that in most cases are based on a misunderstanding, and are things that can easily be addressed. Sometimes they're based on fear, because remember, we're dealing with people in these companies. They also don't want to look bad. So if your proposition doesn't come across very clearly for them, they worry immediately. Their risk alarm bells start ringing, because they're thinking, what if I agree to this proposition from these guys and this thing bombs? I'll be stuck with this thing within the company. I could even lose my job. So it becomes a good place for you to allay their fears, to actually show them that there's no risk at all. If anything, there's all of this upside for them. So that would be my comment to your question. I just wanted to give you what I believe would be a helpful answer than to just give you a list of reasons why people could say no, because there are a million reasons why. But, you know, I don't think, at least I may be wrong about this, but I don't think knowing that all of that list is something that is helpful. But what is helpful is having a strategy to deal with any no that is put in front of you, so that you could respond strategically, whatever it may be, and from a place where you are not needy and desperate for a yes. But I'd love to get some comments from Mark and Keegan as well on this one, so that we can all do all we can to help you.
Keegan, you can go ahead for now.
Did we lose Keegan? Let's see. Let me check. Let me check on my screen.
No. Sorry, I was actually speaking there and I didn't realize I was on mute. Can you guys hear me?
Loud and clear.
So rejection is a big part of like with the selling process. You are gonna get no's. I think for me, I use it as a learning curve, but I also try and I don't like to close the opportunity or close the door completely on anything. So when I do get that no, for me it's no for now, and then I like to stay in the background and then try and still send the guy maybe not as frequent as what. My follow-ups or my emails are, but maybe once in a month or once in every 2 months, just drop the person an email or phone call. Just say, hey, how are you doing? How's things going? We're still around and these are the new things that's happening, or if there's any burning issues that we can assist you with, something short, something sweet, just to remind them of you and your services. So that's pretty much how I approach a no and when receiving. I don't like to close the opportunity fully unless you get something where the guy is actually irate with you and he gives you a straight like thing, then you're like, okay, back off. You know, this is, it's really not going to work.
Brilliant. Thanks.
Sorry, man.
Go ahead, man.
Roaring. Look, from my side, the crux of the matter is, as Keegan and Sia have said, rejection, maybe rejection's an incorrect word in itself, because as Keegan said, it's a lesson. There's always a lesson in something. So, what you're pitching is probably the right match for somebody. You just have to link with the right person. So when rejection, for lack of a better word, does occur, don't be despondent by it. It's normal. It's part of the process. Maybe broaden your view a bit, and maybe the better person's waiting around the next corner, you know. It's a fact of life. Don't take it as a personal thing. People are there to do business, and you're there to do business. If somebody really doesn't want to engage, they're going to say, listen, Chief, I don't have time. Thank you very much. I wish you all the best. And nobody's
been totally, totally, totally. Can't agree more with both of you guys. I agree 100%. And I think just to wrap it up, my relationship with NetBank, now that I remember the story, started with a rejection, because I was approaching them, obviously, as a bank to get a loan for my business, and they declined. And I remember, again, like I said, I've been rehabilitated. Back in the day, I used to get angry. So when they said no to this loan application for my business, I was pissed, okay? But I had to recover from that by thinking, you know what, based on what Keegan said, these guys are a bank. They've got a lot of money sitting there. They've got a lot of stuff that I will need in future. I better be nice. I better play nice. They don't see value in giving me their money right now. They probably see, obviously, they saw a lot of risk. But that doesn't mean next year we can't do something together. And that's exactly what happened. The following year, I ended up partnering with them. Firstly, I got them to pre-order books from me, using, you know, the guilt tripping them, because I got to know them, you know, because I was following up on this application. I was following up and following up, and I was intrigued. And there was somebody very high up who had a relationship with the bank and introduced me. So now they linked me to this person that they respected. Now they wanted to be nice to me, even though they still wouldn't, their numbers, their score wouldn't allow them to give me the R1 million I was looking for. But now they got to know me personally. So when my book was coming out, I reached out to them. Said, hey guys, you know, I've got this new project. I've got this new book. I'd really appreciate it if you could order some books from me. And that's where the relationship started. They bought some books. And then the following year, when I started to do events with the CEOs that were in that first book, I already, now at this stage, I was becoming a seasoned partnership executor, if you want to call it that. And yeah, and then I was like, actually, I can actually see how I can partner with these guys in a way that benefits them. And I focused on that, and they could see that, gee, this would be a great opportunity for them. And that was the beginning of a relationship that has been going on, that is still active to this day. That's been going on for almost 12 years. And, you know, a few million rand later as well. So you don't want to close that door. I agree with Keegan 100%. I think another thought, as I was listening to Keegan and Mark talking, another story, I'm not sure if I shared the story in week one or week two of Walt Disney. Obviously, I don't know if this is true, but it's now, it's one of those stories that become legend of how when he was starting, you know, his theme park, he went to ABC, the TV guys in the US, and they said no. And he was like, okay, guys, so what is it that you want? That if I can help you guys get, you'd be happy to give me money. And then they said, well, actually, we're in the TV business. We're not in the theme park business. So if we could have TV programs developed around some of your characters, and you would, you know, be a producer of that and blah, 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 and blah, 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 we may want to partner with you on that one. And then boom, he said, sure, Of course, you can have Mickey Mouse. we can have a TV show around Mickey Mouse, and as they say, the rest is history. So they saw value in that, and they agreed. So now, I mean, the point of that story is what is now known as the second ask. So when you say to people, "I want, let's do business, let's partner in this way and that way, that way," that is the first ask. So if they say no to the first ask, the second ask is, what do you guys want? Okay. What do you want that if you can get, you would be happy to work with me, to partner with me? Because then they may give you a list of the things they want. And then your job may be to go find, you know, help them get what they want. Like Zig Ziglar said, if you help enough people get what they want, you can have anything you want in life, sorry. You can have anything you want in life if you help enough people get what they want. So find out what they want. And if you can get it, you may get what you want. And I think in closing, I just feel I have to add another story that I think will help this point stick, guys, if you guys will let me tell a quick story before I let you go. So the story is about Bubbles. It's about a lady called Bubbles. There was a gentleman, I'm told, called Ed, who had a car wash, and a very popular car wash. So the person telling the story was selling books, you know, those pocket books, those little books that fit in the pocket, and they come on a rack. So you put them up, they come with their own rack so that you don't have to put them on the shelf. You could just leave them on one of those racks that looked like the old sunglasses racks in places that used to sell those old school sunglasses, the ones that rotate, where you could just turn it around. I don't know if they still have that. I mean, not say old school, but I haven't seen those in a long time. So anyway, this guy had this rotating rack with books. So he wanted to put these books inside one of Ed's car washers so that when people are getting their cars washed, they could peruse the books and maybe buy a copy. So Ed was like, no ways. I'm not gonna have books, no books in my car wash. So the guy had a thought, quick thinking. He was like, Ed, What do you want? What is it that I can do for you that if I did it, you'd be happy to let me put a rack with my books here? And Ed thought for a minute. I was like, you know what you can do for me? You know, there's a lady who works at a gentleman's club, at that famous or popular gentleman's club. I always go there for lunch, but I wanna take her out on a date. But you know, she just blows me off. She's really not interested in me at all. So if you could make a date happen with her, then you could put as many racks as you want in my car wash. So my friend here thought, gee, I'm sure I can do that. So he visited this gentleman's club for lunch as well. And he saw this lady, this bubblicious lady called Bubbles. So he spoke to Bubbles and said, Bubbles, I need your help. Good old Ed over there at the car wash is really, as you know, is very keen to take you out on a date, but you keep blowing him off. And the problem is that I need something from Ed. Something very important for my business. And the only way he would let me get what I want would be if you can, that's a howdy dog somewhere outside. Sorry about that, guys. It's nature doing what nature does. Anyway, so he says, yeah, if you could go on a date with him, it would really help me. And Bubbles was like, no way. I ain't going on a date with stinky old Ed. I'm sorry, not interested. And my good friend, obviously, he knows about the second ask. I'm sure you guys can predict this now, that he went for the second ask. He said, okay, Bubbles, what do you want that if you can get, you can go on a date with good old Ed? And Bubbles thought for a second and she thought, you know what? The only way I would go on a date with Ed is if he can take me for a weekend in Vegas. Obviously, this is in the US, right? So if he can take me to Vegas and spoil me for a weekend, maybe I would then I would hear him out. That was enough for my friend. So he ran back to Ed. He said, Ed, I've managed to get Bubbles to agree to go on a date with you on condition that you take it to Vegas for a weekend. The date is yours. Ed was over the moon because he's got money. So he didn't have an issue taking good old Bubbles to Vegas. Anyway, so that happened. They went on a date. My good friend had put Rex on Ed's car wash. The punchline, obviously, of the story is that Ed and Bubbles got married. Ed and Bubbles got divorced. Now there's a chain of car washes called Bubbles. That's the end of the story about the second ask. So you guys, I hope you'll
never... situation at the end of the day.
What's that?
It's a win-win situation at the end of the day.
At the end, yes, absolutely. The second ask, everybody wins. Because you say, what do you want? What do you guys want? You know, so everybody wants something. I guess in South Africa, we know this better than any country, but we're not going to go there, right, guys?
Yeah, we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, we'll leave it at that. And I don't encourage that approach at all. I know it's even in this country, it's even convenient to pay traffic fines on the side of the road, but I still don't encourage that approach either.
Yeah.
That's it, gentlemen.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Always, cool. Thanks. Always, yeah.
Always exciting to hook up with you.
Yeah. Great chatting.
Yeah, cool. Cool. Thanks, cool. Yeah, I think as we're going through the program, I think the nice thing about it is now it's stimulating our mind, and now I'm starting to see opportunities and things that I never saw before. So,
brilliant.
So that's the nice part about it. Yeah. And yeah, I need to go through the rest of the stuff. But from what I can see so far, yeah, there's a lot to put into action, which is exciting as well.
Awesome. Thank you, Keegan. Right. Awesome, guys. So I'll set up our meeting invite for Friday 10:30, and I'll send it through to you guys. And then on Friday 10:30, I will we are meeting via Zoom. One other thing, and I was thinking about it this morning. Last week's Q&A, I actually, because Chantel was away last week, I don't remember if I uploaded it. Because we did this on a Monday, my brain got completely twisted because I normally do these on Thursdays and Fridays and I upload them on Monday. The last week's recording, I don't know if I've uploaded it, but I'm going to check and I will upload it. Sorry if I haven't. And then I need to inform Chantel to do these. Because now we do this on a Monday, I need to learn this new routine. So yeah, that's just the last thing I thought I'd mention. But anyway, guys, thank you so much, and you guys have a safe evening and a great week ahead. Till I see you on Friday.
Thanks, yeah. Cool.
Thanks, guys. Chat Friday.
Yes.
Is it?
Alrighty. Take care. Bye bye.